Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Rick returns next Sunday. After Charlottesville became the community with the most expensive health insurance premiums in the country, two area residents formed Charlottesville for Reasonable Health Insurance to promote more reasonable premiums. With me in studio this morning are Sarah Stovall. Born and raised in Charlottesville and a graduate of UVA, Sarah has a particular love and understanding of what makes Charlottesville special and a strong desire to protect it. Facing the very real health care crisis in Charlottesville, Sarah has become a passionate and informed advocate for reasonable health insurance and the machinations of the changing political landscape. She works for a small software company and, along with her husband, is raising two energetic boys who she says will change the world. And Ian Dixon. 2.5 years ago, Ian moved from Northern Virginia to Charlottesville because it was the perfect place to raise a family and run a small business. Always politically engaged, Ian became particularly active when the health care premium crisis hit the area in November. In response to the community's needs for answers, he formed the group Charlottesville for Reasonable Health Insurance, which works to problem solve, organize, and challenge the insurance industry and its cronies. He owns and operates his own mobile app business, Dixon Mobility, and has two curious, doting, pre-age school daughters. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
So you each have a sticker shock story.
That's right.
I'll go with you first, Sarah.
Sure. Last year on the ACA, I should go back, actually. For a number of years, we've been getting our health insurance through the ACA, the individual market. Last year, 2017, was the most expensive so far, at roughly $940 a month for my family of four. On November 1st, we had a chance to view the 2018 premiums, and they were roughly tripled for our family. It was going up to just under $3,000 a month with a $12,000 deductible.
And what were your thoughts when that happened? Was it disbelief or panic or what?
Yes, all of those. Certainly, we laughed at first.
Did you think it was a mistake?
I don't know if I thought it was a mistake, but I thought it was absurd. It would not be a good financial decision to purchase insurance at that cost.
Right.
We immediately dismissed it as not an option. It was absolutely outside of the realm of reason for us. We couldn't possibly afford it. It was more than twice our mortgage.
Right.
For a bronze plan, I would like to add.
What kind of deductible did that come with?
It was a $12,000 deductible.
Wow. So $3,000 a month for a $1,200 deductible.
Right. So it would have been $36,000 a year in premiums plus another $12,000 on top of that.
Right.
Before anything would even kick in.
Wow.
We're looking at almost $50,000 a year for health insurance.
Wow. You could buy another house for that. Just about. Ian, you were working for, you were employed by an employer, and you decided to go out on your own, and that's when you got your sticker shock?
So I have been shopping for health insurance on the individual marketplace since the fall of 2016. In 2016, I decided to quit my 9-to-5 job and focus on running my business, and that is a decision that I could never have made if the Affordable Care Act wasn't in place and insurance, real insurance, wasn't available for my family. So I began getting my coverage late 2016, had it 2017 at a cost of $988 per month for a family of four for a silver plan. In 2018, that price was going to jump to $3,158 for a comparable plan, with a higher deductible.
Wow. Well, that's a big change.
Yeah.
Now, you both are parents of families of four, right? So we're talking about a coverage for two adults and two school-aged children.
Correct.
Is that right? For both of you.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian, when you were in full-time employment for the other company, you said you were paying around $900 a month. Did the company pay a portion of that as well?
No, that $900 a month was for my premiums in 2017 on the individual marketplace.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say when I left my position in the corporate world in 2016, I was paying around $450 per month in premium for a better plan than what's being offered now.
And did your company pay a portion of that?
That was my portion of it.
That was your portion.
Yeah, that
right.
was my portion.
But did the company add something to that?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm not sure what.
But not $2,500.
No.
Right. No. Not enough to bring it up to $3,000.
No.
Sarah, you've gone on record as saying you believe that people who make more money should pay more for insurance. Why is this different?
Well, it needs to be a sliding scale.
Yeah.
In my situation, if my family made less money, a little bit less money, and qualified for subsidy, we could have gotten the same plan for about $10 a month. Because the majority of the premium would be subsidized by the federal government. In our case, we don't qualify for the subsidy, so we're responsible for all of it. So there is, you know, the difference of $1 between a $10 a month premium and a $3,000 a month premium is unreasonable.
And unbelievable.
Exactly.
So let's talk about this magic number. Let's make sure everybody really understands this. For a family of four, the magic number is $98,000 a year. Is that right?
It's roughly that.
Yeah.
Roughly. Okay.
Four times the poverty level.
Okay. So whatever the magic number is, it's around $98,000 a year. If you make $1 less than $98,000 a year, you qualify for subsidized insurance, and your insurance costs could theoretically drop from $3,000 a month to $10 a month.
That's right.
Doesn't that seem amazing? Doesn't it seem amazing and ridiculous?
I think it's brought more into focus because of the extreme premium prices. And I agree with Sarah. I don't think there should be a cliff where you're either all of it's paid for or you're footing the bill yourself. I think that should be graded. But I think, you know, people weren't talking about this last year when premiums were pretty much affordable for people who were making over that threshold.
So it could turn out, back to you, Sarah, it could turn out that it would be better for you to quit your job.
Oh,
financially,
certainly. Absolutely.
For your family.
It could be.
Yeah.
And we've considered it at length.
Yeah. I suppose there must be people out there who are, you know, considering options like that, going to part-time or changing their, getting a job that pays less. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but this is the way it is.
It is the way it is. We know lots of people that have done things just like that. In order to get by with health insurance for 2018, I think Ian's point is really important, that the extreme costs here in this area are highlighting the fact that there's a cliff.
Right.
When the prices were a third as much, it made a lot more sense and was not nearly as ridiculous or as impossible.
Sarah Stovall and Ian Dixon here talking about the cost of individual insurance in Charlottesville. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I want to talk a little bit about how we got here, how we got to this situation. Talk about the Republicans, the GOP, have relentlessly for almost 10 years now, 9 or 10 years, have been promoting this repeal and replace. Some people think that that has destabilized the insurance market. Would you agree? True, false?
True.
True.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on a little bit and talk about Optima. Optima is the carrier that is the only carrier. Is that correct in this area?
Correct.
That's right.
And when I say this area, we're not talking just about the city of Charlottesville, right?
That's correct. We're talking about Charlottesville, Albemarle County, Flavanna County, Greene, and Nelson counties.
Okay, so how many people is that? Do you have any idea how many people?
I know there are about 5,000 people in Albemarle alone who shop on the individual marketplace, or who did in 2017 when it was affordable. Right. And of those 5,000 people in Albemarle, 1,500 would have been in this particular situation in which they did not qualify for subsidies.
Now, Optima says that they've lost more than $30 million in the past 3 years under the Affordable Care Act. And this is not sustainable, the not sustainable part, I believe. But that seems amazing to me. Why would they continue a business model that's losing $10 million a year? Your thoughts on this?
I mean, I'm not sure, but I have a hunch that it is related to the fact that they are owned by Sentara, who operate hospitals in every area that Optima offers health insurance. So, you know, there's obviously a kind of a relationship between those two lines of Sentara's business. And if you think about it, had Optima Health not offered insurance in the Charlottesville area in 2018, possibly no one would have. And that is not good for the business of Martha Jefferson Hospital.
Sure.
Are owned by Sentara.
So is that a conflict of interest in your opinion, that the same company owns the hospitals that own, you know, that are paying for the hospitals by collecting these premiums? It seems like a conflict of interest to me.
Yes, it seems odd. It seems strange. I don't know. Clearly, it's not an official conflict of interest, or else it wouldn't continue. But it absolutely makes me question who stands to benefit from their close relationship.
Right.
Yeah, I think you know, in other areas of the state, you have like Kaiser Permanente, who are a true vertically integrated system. They own the insurance piece, the hospital piece, all under one brand. I think a lot of people are surprised to hear that Optima Health is owned by Sentara. So it's not clear to the consumer or to the public that relationship is there.
If anything, it should be to the consumer's benefit, the fact that Optima is owned by the same company as Martha Jefferson. In theory, when it comes to negotiating costs, they should be able to get a better deal. And that should lower prices here, and that should be, you know, we should be the ones that would benefit from that. And clearly that's not what's happening, and so we have a lot of questions about that.
And at what point did Optima become the only game in town? I mean, before that we had Anthem, right?
Yeah. Anthem officially pulled out in August.
And did they say why they were pulling out?
They cited the politics in Washington.
Right.
You know, if you don't believe that the Trump's administration sabotage affected premium prices, just ask the insurance companies. I mean, that was the understood reason and the reason that they communicated to their own customers as to why they were pulling out.
Well, there was certainly a lot of talk early in the Trump administration about the failing ACA, but not really a lot of talk about the fact that they were doing some things that might encourage that.
Yeah.
So that left only Optima. In fact, there was a period when there wasn't anybody, wasn't there? There was a brief period before Optima stepped in, a few weeks or something like that.
There was a lot of back and forth, and before Anthem pulled out, I believe Optima Health was not going to serve this area. And then when it was clear that Anthem was not going to serve this area and Optima was the only provider left, they made the decision to stay.
I'd like to move on a little bit now to talk about Optima's justification for why the rates are so high in this area. They talk about the morbidity rate. What is that? How does that play into it?
That is the level of sickness in a population. And insurance companies are allowed to use morbidity rates within a population to set their prices, but they have to do it at a statewide level. And that is the crux of our argument as to why Optima's filings are erroneous and that the Bureau of Insurance should not have approved them.
So this morbidity rate, I'm not quite following that. You say that It has to be. This is a number. What is the number of them? What is the morbidity rate?
We don't have visibility into that.
Oh, okay.
A lot of this is secret.
Of course. So they're saying that the morbidity rate is high for people in Charlottesville, but you're saying that the law says that they can't distinguish the morbidity rate by region within a given state?
Correct. Correct. So say you have a really sick area of the state, which we don't even think that Charlottesville is, but say you do, and an insurance company wants to offer insurance there and other parts of the state, that morbidity level in that sick area of the state has to be blended and averaged in to their pricing across the state so that one sick patient isn't increasing the premiums of a small community or to prevent what's happened in Charlottesville.
Right.
So the insurance company can bake that into what's called their index rate, which is applied statewide, but they cannot say Charlottesville or any other specific area is going to pay a surcharge because of morbidity in that particular area. And that is what they told us they were doing when we met with them in December.
I'm puzzled by this difference between the small group rate and the individual rate. You worked for a company, you said they paid a portion of your premiums, but nowhere near $3,000 a month. Not only were they insuring a typical family of four, but they were insuring the same family of four. I mean, you have the same health records, the same age children, everything was the same. But as soon as you step out of the small group setting, your insurance rates are much, much higher. Surely your morbidity rate wasn't, not you personally, but the morbidity rate for people in small group plans isn't any different than they are in the individual market.
It might differ a little bit. You might have a slightly different population, but not to the degree that we're being priced at.
And how does Optima respond to that? When you talk to them, did you bring up this issue that when you were insured as part of a small group, your rates were a third of what they are now?
Well, when I was on a group plan with a large employer, that would not have been with the small group plan market. That would have been, that's a totally separate beast. And those plans are still regulated by the ACA. But the small group market itself is for small employers, two to 50 in number.
Right.
And what alerted us to the fact that there could be a real problem here was that Optima themselves operate in the small group market in Charlottesville. And it's very reasonably priced. It's priced at about a third of what their own plans in the individual market are. And the reason for that is there's competition in the small group market. So in the small group market, they're competing with Anthem, I think, Cigna, and some others. They have to have competitive rates, and they're somehow able to offer affordable insurance there when they're being kept honest by competition. But when they have the individual market all to themselves, they've tripled the rates.
So then this morbidity rate is not everything, is it? I mean, they're using that as a justification, but there's more to the story than that.
We think so.
And when you say you've met with representatives from Optima, did you put any of these things before them, and what was their reaction to that?
When we met with them, they tried to explain it in varying ways. They first said, you know, the national politics is affecting this. Donald Trump canceled the cost sharing reduction subsidies, that increased prices. And we understood all of that, that the markets across the country are suffering. But those affect every market in the country. They do not have a direct impact on why Charlottesville is 60% more expensive than, say, Hampton Roads in Virginia.
Right.
Under the same provider.
Right.
So they first tried to suggest that it was you know, the national politics that was driving it. And when we challenged them on that and said, you know, that yes, that explains why prices rose somewhat everywhere, but not why Charlottesville's prices tripled. They then said, well, UVA is an expensive hospital. And those are statements that they also made in the press. They made that in the Washington Post, I believe the New York Times. When this story first broke, they said, UVA is an expensive research hospital. That's why these prices are what they are. They've since backed off that. UVA publicly said that that's not the reason. They wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post. So Optima has stopped making those statements to the press and in public. They repeated them to us. And again, we didn't buy that. And then the conversation with Optima turned to morbidity in this area being higher than other places in the state, which, again, is not allowed.
Sarah Stovall and Ian Dixon here talking about the cost of individual insurance in Charlottesville. You are listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. During the break, Ian, you were saying some things that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's really important for your listeners to understand just how extreme the prices are in Charlottesville. They are the highest prices ever seen under the ACA. We are an extreme outlier. We are 23% higher than the next most expensive market in the country, which I believe is in Nebraska. Somewhere where you might expect health care delivery to be a challenge in some remote areas.
Sure.
So we are 23% beyond that extreme. We are completely off the charts. And before 2018, we were right around the middle of the pack. This has never been an expensive area relative to other places in the country to buy insurance.
And are we still thinking it's because Optima essentially has a monopoly in this area? Is that the primary reason, do you think, or is it just one of many factors?
If that's not the reason, we haven't been given any other reason that satisfies us.
Right. I'd like to talk for a minute about the Virginia Association of Health Plans. This is an organization of health carriers, I understand. They've said Charlottesville is lucky to have a carrier at all. What is your response to that?
That's ridiculous. And the organization you're speaking about does a lot of lobbying on behalf of the insurance companies in Virginia. They spoke to almost every issue that came before the legislative session in Richmond this year, as it relates to healthcare law. And they are out there lobbying on behalf of insurance companies.
We talked earlier about the morbidity rate, but there's also the rating factor. I think it's 1.5 something for Charlottesville. Tell us about the rating factor and how that comes to play.
So again, this is the crux of the issue, and Charlottesville I should back up and explain what an area rating factor is. So each insurance company, when they submit their filings to the state to offer health insurance plans, have to rate each individual market. And there are very specific and pretty straightforward rules about what that rating can be, or what can be factored into that. Unit cost is one of them. So say UVA is an expensive hospital and it costs twice as much there to get an MRI. That's a legitimate factor in the area rating factor. And utilization. So say for some reason people in Charlottesville just bring their kids to the doctor more often when they're sick. So those are the things that are allowed under law into these area rating factors. Charlottesville has never had a high area rating factor. It's always been around what Hampton Roads is. And I keep bringing up Hampton Roads. That's Optima's primary market. And we are 60% more expensive than Hampton Roads.
Wow.
So we've never been an expensive market according to the filings of other insurance companies. And we are not an expensive market if you look at Optima's area rating factor for the small business groups, again, as we discussed earlier.
So each individual carrier makes up their own rating factor or determines their own rating factor? So if we had Anthem back, they might have a different rating factor?
Yep, and they always had us right down the middle.
Right. So our rating factor is 1.5 something. What is it for Hampton Roads?
One.
So yep. We're 50%, slightly more than 50% higher rating factor. And is there a linear relationship between the rating factor and the premium?
Yes. It's a straight multiplier.
It's a straight multiplier.
So that area rating factor is critical. If we were a 1.0 like Hampton Roads is, or thereabouts, like every other insurer has always rated Charlottesville, we would have insurance that would be affordable to most people in the area.
And when you talked to Optum about this, I'm sure the rating factor thing came up. What was their response to that?
UVA cost.
Right.
And then as the conversation went on, morbidity in the area.
Right.
Which is not allowed.
And to this date, they've held fast on this rating factor. They haven't agreed to review it or reassess it or anything like
right.
that.
We have asked the Bureau of Insurance to look into this and see if that area rating factor is justified. One important detail here, I think, is when Anthem pulled out of the area and Optima would have realized that they had a monopoly, they submitted a filing in September. You know, less than a month before everything was due and had to be approved. And they jacked up our area rating factor from, I think, a 1.26 maybe to the 1.579 that we've talked about. So knowing they had the market to themselves, they submitted a fresh filing, jacking up that rate. We don't believe the state of Virginia has ever even seen a area rating factor this high. We asked the regulators at the Bureau of Insurance, when you saw this area rating factor for Charlottesville, did you ask any questions? Did you ask for justification? Did you ask for any more information that would support that increase? And they answered no. They didn't even ask a question about a change that made Charlottesville the most expensive area ever in the ACA.
A little bit later on in the program, I'm going to talk more about the Virginia Bureau of Insurance because I don't think a lot of people know that they exist or what they do. But I'm curious, it's the same population. If Anthem rates it at 1.0 and Optima rates it at 1.5, it seems to me the discussion would be over. I mean, how could they continue to sustain that argument? It seems impossible.
Yeah, and it is impossible because they have not been able to give us an answer that would satisfy the average person. I mean, when you look at that area rating factor, it's absurd. And when you look at the prices that resulted from those area rating factors, it's absurd.
It's one of the reasons we're here. We haven't gotten the answers.
Right.
You know, the first thing we wanted to know back on November 1st was why. Why are we being singled out? Why are we the highest? Right. And we've yet to get an answer on that. We've been given some answers, none of which ring true.
So there's about 1,500, you think maybe there's about 1,500 people in Charlottesville or
in Albemarle.
In Albemarle County mm-hmm. that are in this situation.
Yeah.
With no recourse except quit your job, basically.
Yeah.
Make less money.
Or go uninsured, which a lot of people are doing.
Or go uninsured.
People are moving.
Yeah.
Moving to places in the state or in other states where they can afford the insurance.
Right. You wouldn't think it should come to that, would you?
You wouldn't.
No.
It's important to note that the majority of these people are small business owners. Those are the folks that are really being affected here, and that hits home to me because those are the people that make Charlottesville really special in a lot of ways.
Right.
They are artists and musicians and software developers and all kinds of other people that have been able to start their own business and they've been successful with it. And now, what are they going to do?
Right. I mean, this can make the difference between having a successful private business and not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I look at my own situation. 2.5 years ago, I moved down to Charlottesville knowing I was going to be dependent on running a business. I never could have decided to make that move if health insurance had cost what it does now.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to the magic numbers for a little bit, just so our listeners are staying up with us here. So it's $98,400 if you're a family, $48,000 for individual coverage. Is that right? This is the four times.
$48,000 would be for a couple.
$48,000 for a couple,
uh-huh.
Okay, and a family of four, $98,400.
Oh, the cutoff for subsidies.
Yep. Yes, cutoff for
yes.
the subsidies.
Okay, right. That sounds right.
Right, and if you make $1, if your family or your couple makes $1 less than that magic number, then you qualify for subsidies under the Affordable Care Act.
Correct.
$1 more, and your premiums are tripled.
Correct.
You talked to our congressman about this?
Yeah, and He wants to explain it away as an inevitable outcome of the ACA. He's just towing the line of the administration. He is a fiscal hawk, apparently. He should be very concerned about what's happening here. Like we said, about two-thirds, give or take, of the people in this market get their insurance paid for by subsidies, paid for by the federal government. So if an insurance company is overcharging, like we believe is happening here, then that is, it's fraud. I mean, the federal government would be paying millions just in this area alone on overcharges.
The people that are below that cutoff that do qualify for subsidies are still being charged that same premium amount. It's still roughly $3,000 for a family of four like mine. It's just not coming directly out of their pocket. It's coming out of the pocket of the taxpayers.
Right.
And certainly last year, the difference would have been so much smaller that it wouldn't have been so shocking. So at $940 a month, if we qualified for subsidies, we may have owed $300 a month. Without subsidies, we owe $940 a month. So the difference is still significant for most families, but not nearly as stunning as the difference between $10 a month and $3,000 a month, which is it's just a factor of the fact that these premiums have gone up so far.
Right. Sarah Stovall and Ian Dixon here talking with us about the cost of individual insurance in Charlottesville. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. An argument has been made that small communities like Charlottesville tend to be pricier to cover because there's a smaller patient pool to balance out the risks. Is this true?
It would be true if we were the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. We are not a small town. We are not some remote rural community. We have two major hospitals 5 miles apart. People here, if they need to, can travel to Richmond or Northern Virginia in a car to get, health care delivery is not an issue in Charlottesville. And those are the places where it is an issue that you would expect to see high premium costs.
Ian, in the past, you've said that the people of Charlottesville that are in this situation are really victims of a political game. Do you still feel that way?
Sure. Yeah, so I think this took a perfect storm to happen here. We had to have all the sabotage at the national level, the Trump administration playing games all year. Will I, won't I pull the CSR subsidies? Am I going to remove the individual mandate? That caused a lot of uncertainty that drove out insurers and left monopoly markets in place. Then you had to have an insurance company who was willing to completely overreach, push their luck, take advantage of that situation. And then you need a regulator at the state level who just turns the other way. And that we have all three here.
So do you feel like you're in kind of a small group? We're talking 1,500 people, right, that are immediately affected by this. Do you feel like you've kind of been orphaned off and nobody cares anymore about this 1,500 people?
To a certain extent, yes. But we're here talking to you today. So we have the attention of some folks in the media.
You're not giving up.
No. we know we're right. We know something's wrong here.
Right.
This doesn't make sense. But our biggest concern is that what is a small group being affected right now is going to become a very large group affected next year and the year after that and the year after that. Charlottesville is just the beginning if something doesn't change. Again, if these rates can be approved by the Bureau, then the sky's the limit. And that's the message going to the insurance companies right now. So we have no reason to believe that they're going to file for 2019 with any different numbers.
Right. Both of Virginia's senators are Democrats. Have you had any satisfaction contacting either of them?
Before the focus was on Optima Health and as we were just finding out more about the situation back in November, we went up to D.C., Sarah and I. We met with Tim Kaine, He was very generous with his time. And we talked about this at length with him and his staff. We met with Mark Warner's staff. They were very sympathetic. Tim Kaine's staff has been very engaged. They, for a while, were talking with us on a weekly basis. But the issue is at a state level right now, and there's really a limited amount that they can do on a national level for us. The issue here is that the Virginia Bureau of Insurance should not have approved these rates, and until they say, yes, we made a mistake, no one can intervene, it seems.
Do you think that if the Democrats take back the House and or the Senate in November, that will improve your chances of getting some justice here?
I think it will improve everyone's chances of having reasonably priced health insurance. I uh-huh. don't know that it will directly affect our situation. I'd like to think yes, but I'm not sure that it will.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes I view this as kind of, you know, we're putting all this effort and time into this issue, and it's really just to kind of protect what we already have, right? We're just trying to stop the bleed, and I think people need to realize that the only true fix to this is at the ballot box, and these elections are critical. Everyone should have healthcare at the forefront of their minds when they go to vote in November, because it's getting worse.
We've got a couple of minutes before the break, and I wanted to talk about this Virginia's Bureau of Insurance. Tell us who they are. What is their mandate? Sounds like they haven't been doing a very good job.
The State Bureau of Insurance regulates insurance premiums. I don't know what else they do for sure. Scott White is the new commissioner of insurance. He took over on January 1st.
Are they accessible by just ordinary people? If I had a problem with my insurance carrier, could I call them, write to them,
in theory,
file a complaint?
In theory, yeah. That's where you would file a complaint. And right. We started with that in November, and you get very short, canned responses. Only when we started to get national coverage in the Washington Post and New York Times was Sarah able to break through and actually get a meeting with the commissioner.
And how did that go?
It was our first meeting of two. They said they were concerned, and they said they didn't like the situation. And at that point, they agreed to look into it further. We brought up very specific points that we wanted them to look into. And they're still doing that. That was back in December that we met with them. We've met with them once more since then. We had hoped that they were investigating in good faith. We are questioning that. We don't understand what would have taken so long at this point. We've given them very specific questions to ask of the insurance company, and we haven't gotten the answers we were hoping to get.
Now, they're a branch of the state of Virginia, right? They are a state organization.
They're under the State Corporation Commission.
Right. So they are, in theory, there to help out in situations like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you get the feeling that they are in the pockets of the insurance company somehow?
Sadly, yes. That's the impression that you would take away from that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a couple of things. We went in armed with a lot of information. There's a third guy in our group, Carl, who knows this stuff inside out, and he's had 2-hour back and forth with actuaries at the Bureau of Insurance, and they just didn't have answers for what should be pretty straightforward questions when it came to why were these rates approved. And that we've had that experience twice, and it is clear that despite the fact that we are 23% higher than anywhere else in the nation, that the Bureau of Insurance is still looking for a reason to find that these rates are justified, not looking for a reason to you know, find an issue with them.
Right. Sarah Stovall and Ian Dixon here talking about the cost of individual insurance in Charlottesville. You are listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stream us live online at 94.7WPVC.org or on your mobile device via TuneIn. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with Ian Dixon and Sarah Stovall. We're talking about the cost of individual insurance in Charlottesville, which has been given the dubious honor of being the most expensive place to get individual insurance in the country. Is that right?
Yes.
Not just Virginia,
no.
But anywhere.
23% higher than anywhere else in the country.
That's a dubious honor, indeed. I want to move on now to talk about what you're all doing about it. Ian, you started a Facebook page titled Charlottesville for Reasonable Health Insurance. Oh. Now up to 750 members.
Yep.
Is it helping?
Yeah, and it served a lot of different purposes. At first, it was a way for people to just discuss what they were seeing on their computer screens and that they couldn't quite believe. And then it turned into problem solving. What are the alternatives? How do we get our own personal health insurance? And then it started to become more activism, in tandem with our visit to D.C. Many people from our group were making phone calls to our representatives. They were writing letters. And then again, during the Virginia legislative session, we were in Richmond, a lot of us, lobbying for specific bills that might help us work around this issue. And a lot of people from the group were emailing, writing letters, making phone calls. So it has been a good tool on many fronts.
And have you met anybody in the group that's kind of joined the... I say that not the top ranks, but have joined the two of you in trying to lobby this thing, or have you been pretty much on your own, the two of you?
Oh, no, there are lots of folks that have been really helpful. Ian got in a shout out to Carl Quist already. I'll give him another one. Hey, Carl. a number of other people, Sean, has been super helpful, especially Sean Cosette, mm-hmm. is taking on sort of the lead in Richmond and sorting through the state legislative options that could offer some relief.
And are these new rates, are they in effect now?
Yes. Okay. And they will be until December 31st.
And from your experience with your Facebook group, what are the people doing to deal with this?
It's all over the map. Some people have, like I say, have moved, have closed businesses. Others have gone without. Certainly there are some families. If you have somebody sick with a chronic condition, you don't have a choice. So we have folks that are absolutely paying these outrageous prices. People are considering other alternative options like health shares, as well as some of the short-term plans, which are our very least favorite of the alternative options.
Do you have any advice for people in our listening audience that are in this situation? First of all, they should come join your Facebook group.
Absolutely, yeah. Join the group. You can learn a lot.
You can learn a lot about what to do. But
yeah.
Is there any single best alternative, really?
There's no silver bullet. Some people, like myself, hired someone in their one-person business so that they could qualify for a small group plan and get more affordable insurance. And believe it or not, having an additional person on your payroll can still save you a considerable amount of money compared to the rates on the individual market. But not everyone is in a position to do that. And like Sarah said, some people are paying it. Some people are just flat out uninsured. Some people are taking a risk with what we would call junk plans, these short-term plans.
Sure. I'd like to move on to talk about the attorney you've hired, Jay Angoff. Is that the way you pronounce his name?
That's right.
He was a commissioner of insurance in Missouri, and... he worked with Ralph Nader, published a landmark study in 2005. Sounds like this is a guy in the know. What's Jay done for you so far?
Well, he first validated that we have a case here. We were able to rely on his knowledge from being a commissioner and being an implementer of the ACA before. He's been able to, I think, give our cause credibility. He's been able to get the focus, at least, of the Commissioner of Insurance in Virginia. There's been an ongoing dialogue there. And, we're continuing to look at options moving forward that we wouldn't be able to do if we weren't represented. So it's still ongoing.
And has he interacted with the Bureau, the Virginia Bureau of Insurance, on your behalf? And if so, did that make any difference?
He has interacted them many times. He's in a position to call the commissioner directly, which is a difficult thing for us to do. So that's one big benefit of having him on our side. He got us the second meeting. And it's gotten a lot of answers, but, you know, we're still disappointed in their response.
I think what he's given us in the immediate was an opportunity to work with the Bureau of Insurance and work this out the way it should have been worked out in the first place. Give them the time and space to take a look at this in good faith, take the data that's staring them right in the face and correct what was an erroneous approval. But I think we're nearing the end of that process.
And it sounds like it's not really bearing fruit anyway. The Virginia Bureau of Insurance, although they should be your advocate,
yep,
sounds like they really aren't. Am I reading
that
right?
Certainly how it feels.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, when we first engaged with J.N. Goff back at the beginning of the year, the focus was on getting rates fixed for 2018, which has never been done to our knowledge. So we realized that was a heavy lift. A lot of time has elapsed. We've missed deadlines that would have helped people take advantage of price rates if they were to drop. So now we're kind of shifting to, well, what does next year look like? This is just as important for 2019 as it is for 2018. And the insurance company's filings will be coming into the Bureau of Insurance beginning next month or May.
You asked earlier about getting justice for our cause.
Right.
I would add that we just want reasonable health insurance for the people of Charlottesville. That's why we're doing what we're doing. That's the sole purpose of anything that we do moving forward, is an attempt to get some kind of reasonable plans in place for everybody.
And can I ask each of you to talk about how you're faring through this incredible cost? Are you paying the fees? Did you do something else? What have you each done to combat this yourselves personally?
Well, I am one of the lucky ones in that I was already working for a small company who, as a small company, qualifies for small business plans. So I asked them to look into it, and they did. They did the right thing. And so now I have not inexpensive, but significantly less expensive.
You're managing.
Plan through my employer. Yeah.
Right. Ian?
I hired someone. I was a one-man shop last year. I hired someone, not out of a business need, but to qualify for the small group plan.
Sure.
And so I have a full-time employee who helps me with some administrative stuff. But again, it's not out of a true business need. It's to qualify for a group plan. And that's why I'm bearing the expense of an extra employee.
Of course.
But I'm still saving around $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have any friends in Congress? Anybody, any other congressmen that are trying to move bills that would help this situation? I'm thinking of Senator Lamar Alexander and Patty Murphy. Any others that are trying to do the right thing?
Yeah, we back before the holidays, we did a lot of activism to try and push those bills through. We had letters from people at Charlottesville delivered to every senator that sits on the relevant committees, and that was a specific bill that we were pushing at the time. That bill, I think, is no longer on the table. I think Patty Lamar stepped away from it because the Republicans have attached some stipulations around abortion to that package. So it's purely just a GOP proposal now that I don't think is going anywhere.
And what is reinsurance? What is that?
reinsurance is money that guarantees an insurance company doesn't lose an extreme amount of money on really sick patients. So it's insurance for the insurance companies, essentially.
It's insurance for the insurance companies.
Yeah.
So that not only can they manipulate the rating factor and the morbidity factor, but even if they get all that wrong, they're still covered. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know the technicalities and insides and outs of the reinsurance, but it would prevent, in theory, you have a patient that runs up $10 million worth of medical bills. There's some protection for the insurance companies, and so things like that not being in play create uncertainty in the market and scares insurance companies out.
It's really important to point out that there is an issue across the board with the ACA being sabotaged and it's driving costs up across the country. But our specific case is much, much more than that. Our specific case is a matter of a corporation price gouging because they have the ability to, because they have the monopoly on the market. And that's not an ACA issue. That's
right.
An issue that
right.
Everybody should be able to get behind, including our conservative congressman. The people of his district are getting gouged, never mind the federal subsidies being paid. We're being gouged in multiple ways.
If the Democrats do take back the House, let's say they take back the House in November, we'll still have Trump, at least for another 2 years. Do you think that a Democratic Congress could influence this sufficiently to make things work better? Or do you think as long as Trump is president, we're going nowhere with this?
I think that remains to be seen. It seems like he's willing to consider whatever just based on how the wind's blowing. And I think if a Democratic Congress could come up with fixes for what's happening right now that were popular, I think he would consider it. You don't have to dig too far to find situations in other states in the past where regulators have gone aggressively after insurance companies for unjustified rate hikes that are insignificant compared to the rate hikes that we have.
And I want to come back just briefly. Again, you touched on this earlier, Ian, but this seems to keep coming up, is that this is a more expensive area because of the University of Virginia has a medical hospital here. Has that been completely laid to rest at this point? It's not true. Is that right?
I don't think there's any way that explains the full rate hike that we're seeing. I do think there's potential that the rates that UVA and Optima have set together are high. Again, I don't think it would explain away our full rate increase, but we've asked UVA to meet with us to discuss it. They've given some pretty brief, incomplete answers to questions that we've sent them. And so we'd love to sit down with them and talk with them about it.
We've also asked to see the rates.
Oh, yeah.
They're not public.
I'm sure that went well.
They said no.
Yeah, we filed a Freedom of Information
request. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they said they couldn't based on confidentiality.
Uh-huh.
We'd really like to see some laws changed at a state level that would make those public. There are states that have that.
Is there a legal challenge for the FOIA request? Can you make a legal challenge that this information should be released?
We haven't gone down that avenue yet, but I wouldn't take it off the table.
Is it a possibility? Yeah. The individual mandate. Republicans have been saying it's unconstitutional, it's got to go. But it seems to me that without the individual mandate, well, first of all, let's talk about the individual mandate and what it is. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the individual mandate stipulates that everyone needs to have health insurance. And the goal behind that is to bring in younger, healthier people so that you just don't have a small, sick pool of people buying health insurance, which is what we're going to end up with here if things aren't resolved.
I'll add that they wisely wrote into the ACA an exemption for people whose only insurance option is extremely expensive. I think it's something like 8%. If it's more than 8% of your income, you do not have to pay any kind of penalty under the mandate. If you go without insurance, of course, that doesn't help people get the insurance, but it does mean you don't have to pay the penalty in a situation like ours.
And talking about extremely expensive, all of this stuff you're doing, hiring lawyers, traveling around the country, it's not free. You've established a GoFundMe account. Is that still going?
It is, and it can be reached at sevillehealthcare.com.
And how successful has that been so far?
It's been great. People's response was amazing. We had to come up with an initial fund to retain our attorney, and it was a tight timeline, and people responded. I mean, it was really touching to, you know, a lot of these people are financially stressed right now because of what's happening, and they donated to this cause.
This goes back to your question about our group. We had a lot of resources because so many of these people are self-employed. They've started businesses. They have things. They know things. People started donating goods. I can't remember what the first one we got was.
Like a one-hour massage.
Right. We were really hitting the fundraising hard at the beginning of January. And people in the group started donating gift certificates for their services as, you know, a prize. So anybody who, you know, donates $100 in the next hour, you know, might win a massage. And then as soon as somebody else saw that, they said, well, I want to donate. And people started, it was really cool. Mm-hmm. People were jumping in with all kinds of ideas on how they could help. And we've raised $20,000.
Wow, that's great. And how did you two come together to form this thing? How did you know each other through work or?
We did not. After I initially formed the Facebook group, I had seen Sarah posting a lot of information on moms groups on Facebook, and I tried to pull her in, thought she might be able to bring some people in. And when we landed the coverage from the New York Times, the reporter said he wanted to come down to Charlottesville immediately to interview, and he asked me to get some people from the group together, and Sarah stuck out as someone who was really engaged, knew what she was talking about. So I reached out to her, and
I think Ian and I happen to be sort of the two of the most vocal people from the beginning. We both independently, before we had met each other, reached out to a number of reporters, hoping to find someone who would dig into the why of the situation. And we both had luck in different places and were able to pull each other in. I think we're also just both the kind of people that can't let an injustice go by without jumping up and down, and so here we are.
Sadly, our time is up. Before we go, how do people find you, the URLs for your website, how do we find your Facebook page, your GoFundMe fund again? Just run through the whole list for me.
All of our media coverage, our GoFundMe, everything is available at sevillehealthcare.com. That's C-V-I-L-L-E healthcare.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Charlottesville for Reasonable Health Insurance.
And we'll put all of those links on the podcast of this program after it airs today. We have been talking with Sarah Stovall and Ian Dixon about the cost of individual health insurance here in Charlottesville. This and every episode of The Wake Up Call is available on demand from SevillePodcast.com. Join us next Sunday at 11 a.m. when Rick Moore's guest will be Seville Weekly News editor Lisa Province, who will be talking about current events in Charlottesville. Coming up at noon on 94.7 WPVC, it's El Club del Sabor. For The Wake Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.